The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn, and thanks for joining us for Pod 39, Tracks of a Killer. Tonight, we're on the case in Elgin, South Carolina, about 20 miles northeast of Columbia. The tight-knit community was devastated when a young woman was discovered savagely murdered along a deserted dirt road. The brutal crime left a shattered family searching for answers and investigators hoping to pick up the trail of her killer.
February 26, 2014. It was 2:30 on a chilly winter afternoon when Sergeant Justin Dill got a call that changed his life forever.
Father called into the office and said that his kids found a body, or what they believed to be a body, out on the edge of the woods behind the houses.
Sergeant Dill knew the location, a deserted dirt road that ran behind the residential neighborhood.
In the back of your mind, you can't help but think maybe somebody is playing a joke.
Unfortunately, this was no joke. As soon as he arrived, he realized the children had stumbled upon a homicide scene.
My first thought when I walked up was, oh my God, this is a small child, because she's less than 100 pounds, a little over 5 feet tall. She was lying face down on the ground, covered up with a towel.
As the shaken officer looked closer, he realized that the victim was actually a teenager, a recent graduate of a nearby high school.
I kneeled down. I could see a Lugoff Elgin class ring, which is a school in Kershaw County.
Sergeant Dill didn't disturb the towel that covered most of her body, but from what he could see, there was little doubt that the teenager had been the victim of a sadistic, sexually motivated attack.
She was scratched and cut pretty good. Her pants were actually pulled off and caught on one of her shoes on one leg.
Evidence of a violent struggle surrounded the young victim.
There was a belt laying next to her that had a shoe print on top of it where someone had stepped in the sand and then stepped on top of her belt. Her purse had been dumped out on the ground. There were items scattered all around her body.
A torn piece of an iPhone charger had been left there as well.
It looked like somebody just dumped everything out next to her and covered her up and left.
Investigators sealed off the area and found several more critical clues just steps away.
Special Agent Haley Quam.
Her purse was turned upside down, and then there was other miscellaneous items such as a white iPhone cord, and there was a name tag that had her name on it, Brianna.
The name tag, a restaurant ID, only revealed the young woman's first name. But a driver's license confirmed her complete identity.
Sheriff Jim Matthews.
18-year-old Brianna Rabin. She was kind of a free spirit from what I knew. She was a typical 18-year-old.
The emotional impact of the crime hit the sheriff and his investigators hard.
The most horrible thing about the crime scene was the condition of the young lady. She was almost totally nude, face down, in the dirt.
Those working the scene couldn't help but think of their own children.
many of us have daughters ourselves that age, or some of my officers have young wives, you start thinking about, wow, that could have been my wife, that could have been my daughter.
That frightening thought galvanized everyone to the task at hand, finding the evidence that would identify Brianna's killer.
The whole department, even people that aren't involved in criminal investigations, we've got this little girl that we found dead. Everybody wants to do something to help.
There was a lot of questions that you had when you first got to the scene. You wondered, how did this girl get to this location?
And the answer to that question appeared to have been etched into the dirt road itself.
We could see when we walked up to the body that there was a set of tire tracks coming down the hill, and that they backed up and turned around into the sand, and they appeared to be the only tire tracks that were here.
Detectives were confident that the fresh tire tracks were a critical clue.
It was obvious that they were involved in this crime, so I had another deputy mark that area off because I knew we would need to preserve that.
Investigators methodically began taking pictures of the tracks.
When we take those photographs, you take them with a scale, and you usually take multiple photographs of the one impression.
The importance of the tire tracks only grew when detectives studied them more carefully.
This was a unique case. The suspect's vehicle had four different tires on his vehicle, and the tire examiner was able to do class characteristics on all four of those tires.
When the medical examiner arrived, the towel that had been covering the victim was removed, and the incredible brutality of the attack came into focus.
We rolled her over, and you could see that her shirt had been cut off, as well as her bra. She had blood running from her nose and her mouth. One of her earrings had been ripped clean through her ear.
The medical examiner also discovered biological evidence on the victim's body.
There was DNA under her fingernails, and there was semen found on her back.
And near the body was another piece of evidence that detectives believed had been left by the killer.
There was a piece of chewed up green chewing gum laying next to her. It didn't look like it had come out of her mouth because of the way she was laying.
The medical examiner confirmed that Brianna was killed during a violent sexual assault. The cause of death, asphyxiation.
There was so much trauma to her neck that it was more consistent with strangulation.
You could clearly see from the way the markings were around the neck that some sort of object was used to do the strangulation. There was a belt laying there. The phone charger was a possibility because it was broken.
Investigators were convinced that whoever had killed Brianna had no respect for human life.
One of the first things that went through my mind was, whoever the monster was that did this, if we don't catch him, he may do this again.
At the same time sheriff's investigators were processing the evidence at the murder scene, Linda Reynolds was frantically searching for her 18-year-old daughter, Brianna Rabin.
I tried calling her and didn't get an answer and got really concerned because we talked every day. If we didn't see each other, we still talked.
By lunchtime, Linda was beginning to panic. She called the restaurant where Brianna worked and was told that she had never showed up for work that day.
I actually called her place of employment because I thought maybe she'd just gotten busy and gone on to work and didn't get talked to me. I asked the girl that answered the phone, I said, did Brianna call in? She said, no, ma'am, said she didn't call in. I told her, something's wrong, something's very wrong.
Linda reached out to the teenager's friends and the rest of her family, trying to track down Brianna. Brianna's sister-in-law, Lindsay Miles.
I wasn't really concerned at first, but then when I realized there was nothing on Twitter, nothing on Facebook, Instagram, I think that was the red flag for me.
Brianna's older brother, Josh, was out looking for a sister when he received a frantic call from his wife.
She called me and she was hysterical. She just kept saying, "I'm so sorry, Josh." That's all she'd say. I was just asking her what's wrong. And she said the lady had told her that they found a body and it said Brianna on it and had a Texas Roadhouse name tag.
Then Brianna's brother alerted his mother to the disturbing rumor floating around the small community.
Josh had called me back screaming and crying, saying that he'd gotten a call and found a body and her name was Brianna.
Later that afternoon, Linda was given the heartbreaking news. Her daughter had been murdered.
Kershaw County deputies told us it was positively her.
Linda Reynolds was crushed. It seemed impossible to accept that her vibrant and loving teenage daughter had been found dead.
My life was turned upside down. And never in a million years would I have thought my daughter would have been murdered. You just don't ever think about that happening to your family.
Linda told investigators Brianna had recently moved out to live on her own, waitressing at two restaurants to try to save money for her education.
She was growing up and maturing into the adult. She wanted to go to college the next year. She wanted to be a school teacher. She loved children.
No one could understand how someone like Brianna could have become the victim of such violence.
I just couldn't believe that someone could be so cruel to murder her and dump her in the woods.
Brianna's friend, Dallas Brazel.
Brianna was the happiest person in the world. She was just always, always singing and just so happy and full of energy. And you just wanted to be around her all the time. She would give you the shirt off her back and she would always be there for you.
Brianna loved spending time with her family. She had an incredible bond with her older brothers and her nephews. Brianna's brother, Jason Miles.
She was always with my two boys.
I think the hardest part is my children. They lost such an amazing person. It's just heartbreaking.
The senseless and terrifying crime had the Kershaw County Sheriff's Department working around the clock.
We full court pressed this thing, did everything we could, asked for all the help we could get.
Within hours, police found Brianna's missing car. It was the first big break in the case.
A deputy located her car down at the Waffle House, just a few miles away from where her body was found.
Investigators hope to find video of Brianna or her car.
Most convenience stores and restaurants these days have surveillance cameras, so we were able to jump right on that.
At first, detectives were disappointed. The Waffle House cameras only recorded inside the restaurant. But as they watched the tape, it appeared they had captured a critical clue.
The investigators called me and told me that they believed they had video of Brianna and another white male coming inside of the Waffle House.
Sergeant Dill raced to the restaurant, hoping to look at images of Brianna with her killer.
I recognized the girl and the guy in the video. The girl actually lived a few houses down from me, and that was not Brianna.
The young detective was frustrated.
You get excited and you come check out the evidence and then it's kind of a dead end.
On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment. Just as one door closed for investigators, another opened. Down at the crime scene, police had found Brianna's missing cell phone. Sergeant Justin Dill.
We found her cell phone laying about 25 to 30 yards from where her body was. Somehow that cell phone ended up that far away from her, so it was either someone threw it to try to discard it, or maybe she dropped it when she was running.
Detectives immediately sent the phone off to the crime lab, hoping that technicians would be able to find a fingerprint of their suspect.
Took it to our lab, and I tried to fingerprint it because my phone has a nice, clean surface, and I thought maybe somebody touched it. That was unsuccessful.
Police were also unable to access the call logs and text messages.
The phone was locked. We actually had the FBI ship it off to Apple in California.
While detectives waited for the manufacturer to open Brianna's cell phone, tips about the teenager's last known whereabouts began to pour into the sheriff's department.
We were trying to follow down every lead that anybody called about.
On the morning before Brianna had been found, detectives learned she had gone to the Texas Roadhouse restaurant just before noon. Surveillance video documented her picking up her tip money. Later that day, she visited her best friend, Savannah.
She came in and she was like all happy, and because she never got a day off, ever. We're so excited to hang out with each other.
The two friends had lunch at Savannah's house and chatted for a few hours. Then Savannah's brother Tyler walked in carrying a new car stereo for Brianna.
Her brother had sold her a car stereo, and they were trying to figure out how to install it into her car.
Brianna's friend, Tyler Locke.
We tried to install the radio, but it didn't really work out.
According to Tyler, Brianna left their house around 5:30 p.m., determined to find someone who could help her get the radio to work.
She was calling several people just trying to find someone who could help.
It was now the mystery investigators had to solve. Did one of those calls connect Brianna with her killer? Sergeant Dill knew Brianna's life revolved around social media.
These days, young girls generally go nowhere without a cell phone. And through talking to some friends of her, she was no different than most girls. Her life revolved around her cell phone, whether it was Twitter, Facebook, she was constantly on it.
On the night Brianna was killed, she had primarily used text messages to stay in touch with her friends. The iPhone's manufacturer told investigators that records of those communications might not be available for months, if ever. Sergeant Dill knew he couldn't wait for Apple to unlock the teenager's phone, so he came up with another plan.
I went out to all of her friends and got screenshots of her last text that were time-stamped and dated from their phones. That's how I was able to establish a timeline of who she was talking to and at what point she quit talking to everyone. The content of the messages that she was sending to her friends proved useful.
Police were able to establish that Brianna had left Savannah and Tyler Locke's home at 5:30. The timestamp from the last text Sergeant Dill could find was 7:44 p.m.
They just stopped. There's no communication after that.
Sergeant Dill wanted to find out what Brianna had done during that 2-hour and 14-minute time frame. Tyler Locke gave him an important clue. He said Brianna had been trying to reach a friend named Graham Stone while she was at his house.
He was first indicated to me as being a boyfriend of Brianna's.
Investigator Dill brought Graham in for questioning.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in the court of law. Do you understand that? Yes, sir. Apparently you had some kind of relationship with Brianna, but never dated.
The 19-year-old told police that Brianna had been trying to get in touch with him that evening.
She said something about she couldn't find nobody to hook her radio up.
Graham said he had been busy at work when Brianna left him that message. He finally got in touch with her around 6:30.
I called her phone back and asked her if she needed me to help her with her radio, and that was the last I heard from her.
Dill wanted to know where Graham was around 8 o'clock at night when Brianna had lost contact with the world.
Through talking to Graham, he said, I was at work. He worked for a cabinet company.
And when police looked into Graham's alibi, they found out that he was telling the truth.
He was out of town during the time that contact was lost with Brianna. We were ultimately able to confirm that he was at work during the time that she kind of stopped talking to everyone. He was eventually ruled out as a suspect.
During his interview, a visibly distraught Graham remembered one important detail about his last conversation with Brianna.
She was like, well, I'm about to meet Alex and Andrew and go to their house. That's what she told me. She was either with or going to Alex's to see if they could do her radio.
Andrew and Alex Staley were high school acquaintances of Brianna, who lived about 5 miles from the crime scene. Brianna's friends said the brothers had unusual personalities. Brianna's friend, Savannah Locke.
There's something off about them. They're really quiet. They're to themselves.
Detective Dill didn't know what to expect when he paid the Staleys a visit.
When I arrived at the home, I made contact there with Alex, his brother Andrew, and their mother, and I asked them, had Brianna Rabin been at their house on the previous day?
And before the Staley brothers could answer the detective, their mother stepped in.
The mother actually chimed in and said, I was actually telling the boys we're going up there to the sheriff's office because Brianna was at our house yesterday and y'all need to go talk to the cops.
Investigators were suspicious as they carefully analyzed the young men's stories. Alex told Sergeant Dill that Brianna had stopped by at 6 that night, hoping he could install her new car radio.
He described to me that, you know, they kind of hung out where she parked in their driveway, and he told me that they couldn't quite figure out how to get the radio in.
His brother Andrew claimed he wasn't there.
Andrew told me that he was never there. He never saw Brianna. Matter of fact, he didn't get there until, I think, after 8 p.m.
Alex said that he quickly realized he wasn't the right person to hook up the radio.
Alex says, yeah, we couldn't get the radio installed. I don't really know much about it.
Sergeant Dill remained skeptical.
They were the last people to be with Brianna on the day before we found her.
But while Dill was finishing up the interview, his phone rang. A new surveillance video had been found.
I got a call when I was talking to the Staleys that said, we've got a video of her car, and there's a car following it when she parks at the Waffle House.
The video was obtained from a gas station near the restaurant.
Those cameras were at a gas station, which is just on the back side of the Waffle House. The Waffle House cameras are only on the inside of Waffle House. They don't have an outside parking lot camera.
Sergeant Dill was still trying to determine if Alex and Andrew Staley had been telling him the truth when sheriff's deputies said that they needed him to screen the surveillance video at once.
They were at the gas station watching the video. They told me, hey, we got her car coming in here. You can watch it all the way around the Waffle House until it backs up and parks. And they said another dark-colored sedan comes in and then pulls up in front of her car.
The timestamp showed that the video had been recorded at 7:30 p.m. But that wasn't all.
It appears that she got into the car with whoever this other person was, and they left together, going towards the direction of Hayes Creek, which is where she was found. That's got to be the last person that she was with, based on the timeline.
But who was the driver of that car? Sheriff Jim Matthews hoped that the video would be the clue that cracked the case. And after watching the footage, he was confident that the newly found evidence could lead to Brianna's killer.
First of all, it's not that far from the crime scene. Secondly, it gave us a description of the vehicle that she got into when she was last seen alive.
More on The Case, the podcast, after this. Two of Brianna's friends had received texts from her after she was videotaped leaving the Waffle House. Brianna had texted her best friend, Savannah Locke, at 7:40.
At that point, I didn't get a feeling that anything was wrong.
And Brianna's last communication, sent 4 minutes later at 7:44, also appeared normal. Brianna reminded a friend of their plans for the following day. Sergeant Justin Dill.
She didn't communicate who she was with, where she was going, nothing. The text messages were very vague, which was a little unusual because the texts were to her best friend, and if it was someone that everybody knew, she probably would have said, hey, I'm with so-and-so, but she didn't name anyone.
While the texts didn't help investigators identify Brianna's killer, the messages did provide insight into Brianna's mindset in the final moments before the attack.
In any homicide investigation, until you have a good lead, everyone is a suspect. In this particular case, especially people that would have been close to her, because when she lost contact with the world, she didn't appear to be afraid of whoever it was she was with.
In light of the new evidence he collected, Sergeant Dill believed he had to question the Staley brothers again.
I tried to get a little more detailed about what transpired at the Staley's residence that night.
The first step was verifying Andrew's story that he had never seen Brianna that night.
Andrew had told me that he was never there because he was at a meeting. I was able to go to the place where he was in the meeting, and there is a sign-in sheet, and I was able to obtain a copy of that to show that he was, in fact, not at home during the time that Brianna was at the residence.
With Andrew's alibi confirmed, he was cleared as a suspect. But it turned out that Alex Staley did have more information to share with police. During an intense interrogation, the teenager revealed that there had been someone else at his house that night.
He says, I called my friend and asked him, could he come over?
Alex told the investigators his friend's name was Stephen Kelly. He had been invited over to try to install Brianna's car radio.
He said Stephen came over, looked at it, decided that he really didn't know anything about it, so they just weren't going to mess with it.
Stephen Kelly was older than Alex and Brianna. The 21-year-old had a criminal history that included theft and burglary. The new potential suspect intrigued the investigator, and he wanted to know if Stephen Kelly and Brianna had any kind of prior relationship.
It was indicated to me that they knew of each other. Brianna knew Stephen's girlfriend.
Alex said that once Brianna realized that neither he nor Stephen Kelly could connect her radio, she left around 7:15. Kelly got into his car and followed her just seconds later.
He said, "I don't know where they were going." One of them told me when they left, she went down the driveway. Brianna took a right going towards Highway 601, which is where the Waffle House is. There was no indication that they were leaving together. He had no idea where they were going. As far as he knew, they were just leaving his house.
Sergeant Dill believed he now knew who had been driving the car that had followed Brianna into the Waffle House parking lot.
This is Brianna's car pulling into the Waffle House where she parked her car. She pulls up and then she parks into a parking spot. A few seconds later, the car pulls up to pick her up. The car then leaves towards the neighborhood where we found Brianna's body.
And his suspicions deepened when he asked Alex Staley to describe Stephen Kelly's car.
When he came, what was the driver? He was driving his car. It's an Impala. I want to say it's like a dark color, almost like a charcoal, kind of a blue color.
Could it be the same dark-colored sedan that drove Brianna Rabin to the dirt road where she was murdered?
It was a color and make of the car, a dark-colored sedan coming out virtually from where the area where her car was parked.
When Alex Staley had first mentioned the name Stephen Kelly, investigator Justin Dill had a gut feeling that the young man was somehow involved in Brianna's death.
It drew a red flag for me. It doesn't seem like much, but I got this name that hasn't been mentioned at all by anyone. You haven't heard from him, you haven't seen him. That's a red flag.
And Dill's suspicions about Kelly continued to grow with each new fact he learned about him. The first was confirming that he drove a dark-colored sedan.
I sent two investigators out to drive by his home and see what his vehicle looked like. Turned out to be a dark gray Chevy Impala. It matches the description of his car. They're coming from the direction of where both of them just left, which was the Staley's house.
Sergeant Dill hoped to find clearer video that would remove any doubt that the car in the video was Stephen Kelly's.
I coordinated with all the investigators, and we went out to where she was found. Anywhere we saw a camera on a house, we'd stop and say, "Hey, we're working on a homicide. Do you mind if we take a look at your surveillance video?"
And the painstaking effort quickly paid off.
While we canvassed the area, we found that the house across the road over here has a camera that watches this particular entranceway. And we caught video of a car coming out.
The car looked like the same sedan that Brianna had gotten into at the Waffle House. Armed with two different surveillance videos that appeared to connect Kelly to the crime, Sergeant Dill decided it was time to bring his suspect in for questioning.
I said, "Hey, Stephen, how you doing? I'm Justin Dill from the Sheriff's Office, and I'd like to talk to you about the disappearance of Brianna Rabin." He says, "Okay, but I'm supposed to go to work. Do you mind if I call and tell him I might be a little bit late?" And I said, "Yeah, you might want to call him and tell him you're going to be late."
As Kelly stood in the doorway wearing a T-shirt, Dill noticed signs he had recently been in a struggle.
I could see that he had marks on his knuckles and he had some scratches on his forearms.
The detective wondered if those scratches had been left by Brianna Rabin in a desperate struggle to survive.
Because of the appearance of the body, the defensive wounds, she had superficial scratches and abrasions on her arms and also on her legs and knees. That's what I was thinking.
Investigators took note of Kelly's reaction to their sudden arrival. Sheriff Jim Matthews.
Mr. Kelly was very calm, didn't question anything.
I said, we have a search warrant for your vehicle. He never asked, why are you taking my car? He never asked anything. And in the back of my mind, it's almost like he was expecting us to come.
Dill then asked Kelly to take a ride with him to the station, and the young man again seemed unfazed.
I said, do you mind coming down to the office and talking to us? And he said, yeah, I'll come down there and talk to you.
At the sheriff's office, Kelly admitted that he had been at Alex Staley's house on the night in question, but denied he had any contact with Brianna.
Brianna was there, because she wasn't there while I was there.
Sergeant Dill pressed Kelly about the obvious lie.
I confronted Stephen with the fact that Alex's mother said she was there while you were there because she watched you come. And she watched you leave.
But Kelly continued to dig himself into a hole, claiming he was still at the Staley's home after surveillance video had recorded his car entering the Waffle House parking lot.
I left here probably about 8, probably got home around 9. You left at 7:15. You and Brianna pulled out the driveway at the same exact time. At 7:33 in the video from the boathouse. Both of y'all's cars pulling in there. She parks her car and gets in your car and y'all drive off.
I never picked her up, man.
It's on video, dude. That's not me bluffing.
Why did I get no car with me?
Well, I mean, there's not really any disputing it. You know, I'm not really asking you a question. I'm telling you what I watched with my own two eyes.
Stephen Kelly sensed he was trapped and tried to change his story. This time, he admitted picking up Brianna at the Waffle House, but claimed he only gave her a ride back to the Staley's.
Man, honestly, I'm going to ride back to Alex's. What'd y'all do when y'all got back there? I left her there. She don't want her dad riding by Alex's and seeing her car there.
Sergeant Dill then told Kelly about the second videotape investigators had collected that placed his car less than a mile from the crime scene.
I said, okay, then why do I have these videos of your car going through Hayes Creek subdivision?
It was at that moment that Kelly seemed to realize just how much trouble he was in.
The last person that Brianna was with was you. There's no way out, dude.
Yeah, but basically, I'm telling you that I got something to do with it.
I know you do. I can put you there.
I can't even tell you.
The interrogation had police convinced he was Brianna's killer. But forensic experts examining Kelly's car eliminated any doubt.
One of the technicians from SLED was able to give me a pretty good indicator. The car had 4 different tires on it. The tire impressions from the scene where Brianna's body was found had 4 different tires that each had a unique tire pattern.
Kelly's shoes were also a match to the footprints found at the crime scene. Special Agent Haley Kwong.
The shoes ended up being class characteristics to the impression that was located on the belt.
But even more damning were the results of the DNA testing.
Kelly's DNA hit on the chewing gum that was found.
His DNA was found under her fingernails, and his DNA was found on her body.
There's no way it couldn't have been him.
On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment. Sergeant Dill wasted no time sharing the news with Stephen Kelly and his attorney.
I said, "Stephen Kelly, you're under arrest for the murder of Breanna Raven." And his response was, "Okay." I've dealt with a lot of suspects in the past 10 years, and an innocent person would be obviously flipping out. I mean, you would be proclaiming your innocence, not just look me in the face and say, "Okay, turn around, put your hands behind your back." Just no remorse, no emotion, no denial, nothing.
The evidence the sheriff's department collected painted a disturbing picture of the last moments of Breanna's life.
I feel like she went out voluntarily, just hanging out with Stephen. And I feel like at some point, things went wrong. And I believe maybe he made some advances towards her. She starts to panic and gets out to run.
Kelly then physically overpowered the tiny teenager before assaulting and strangling her. Sheriff Jim Matthews.
She had his skin under her fingernails, so she scratched him. She resisted.
Things went bad, and one thing led to another, and she ended up paying.
It came as no surprise to investigators when Stephen Kelly decided to plead guilty to murder.
I knew the amount of evidence that we had against him. This was a, in my view, a slam dunk case. He had no way out.
Breanna's brother, Josh Miles.
Honestly, I don't think he wanted his family to see the actual evidence and just to hear the horror story that he created. I think that's the only reason he pled guilty.
In front of a judge, Stephen Kelly spoke directly to Breanna's family. Breanna's mother, Linda Reynolds.
He did tell us he was sorry.
If I could have just went home that night, I'd have just let her run, let her go.
But Breanna's family didn't want to hear Kelly's excuses for committing the brutal crime.
We stopped him because there was nothing he could say or tell me that would justify what he did to my daughter.
Reporter Martin Kahn covered the plea hearing for the Chronicle Independent newspaper.
It was a very short statement, whether he truly felt regret because he had taken a life or that he felt regret that he'd gotten caught. Honestly, I don't know.
Breanna's mother made an impassioned statement asking for her daughter's confessed killer to be given the maximum sentence.
"Please, Your Honor, I'm begging you to give this man life so that he doesn't hurt anyone else."
In the end, the judge sentenced Stephen Kelly to 50 years in prison. He's scheduled to be released at the age of 72. Breanna's family was shocked by the judge's decision. They felt that Kelly deserved the maximum sentence for the sadistic crime.
The least that he should have ever gotten was life without parole. I saw the pictures. I don't feel like that was justice at all.
Breanna's brother, Jason Miles.
His mom and dad still get to, they can call and talk to him on the phone. We never get to talk to Breanna. All we got is memories.
For Breanna's friends, her murder has become a heartbreaking cautionary tale. Breanna's friend, Savannah Locke.
That kind of stuff doesn't happen in a town in Kershaw County. Like, it just never happens. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody hangs out with everybody.
You look at the world different. I just want girls out there to be aware of your surroundings and not trust everybody you meet. Because it can happen.
Breanna's friend,
Dallas Brazel.
If any good comes out of it, it's just for people to be cautious, to let people know where you're going to be at, who you're going to be with. Don't take for granted your friends or your family.
And Brianna's friend Dallas tries to focus on her friend's life rather than dwelling on the crime that tragically ended it so abruptly.
I feel like if people remember her for what happened, it'll take away from her life. And her life was so much more than just that one moment. She was a great person.
Although his younger sister's murder still haunts him every day, Josh also chooses to reflect on all the good times he spent with her. He also fondly recalls just how proud he was of the young woman she had become.
I never want this to define who my sister was. Brianna was a fun-loving, caring person with tons of friends and family that loved her. The girl that they found on the side of that road, that's not Brianna.
Brianna's family has been forced to accept that there's nothing they can do to change what happened to their loved one. But that doesn't make the loss any easier.
I just regret that she won't get to be that teacher she wanted to be. That she won't ever get married and have children. She's up in heaven, taking care of all those children up there who may be waiting on their parents. So I'd like to think of it like that.
And while Josh says that his sister will always be with him in his heart, he wears a charm as a public tribute to his beloved sister.
It's her thumbprint. And it says, RIP, rest in peace, Minnie Me. I don't know if it brings me strength, but I don't know, it just makes me feel like she's with me.
While serving his 50-year sentence at Lee Correctional Institution in Bishopville, South Carolina, Stephen Ross Kelly was found dead in his prison cell on February 12, 2022. The 29-year-old inmate had been receiving treatment for COVID-19. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.